Sunday morning as well. We're going to do something ancient. We're going to bless some people. And that is probably not something most of us consciously do on any given day, so I want to bring it quite deliberately into our context. Both our context here, so very particularly, and also more generally our cultural, our kind of wider cultural context as 21st century Westerners. When I started into the more particular preparations for this morning, I was already convinced enough that we should do this to proceed with the details, but then this past Monday, I had two separate conversations that really reinforced my initial thoughts, but from two really different perspectives. First conversation was with a guy named Matthew Kent. Some of you know Matthew. He's been a part of our gatherings. He leads a small group in contemplative practices that some of you have been a part of. He'll be our guest here again in a couple of weeks to have a conversation with me about being present. In my circle of relationships, Matthew is the person that I know best that has organized his life most vigorously around spiritual receptivity and connectivity and the practices that facilitate that. Like he just has engaged this more thoroughly in his life than anybody else I know. When I think about Matthew's way of life, I think this guy's a 21st century monastic. He's sort of a monk for our times. And that's kind of the way he's chosen to live his life. Part of our conversation on Monday was why anyone would bother showing up for something that we might think of as church. And one of the reasons we got talking about that is because it's certainly not something that the wider culture reinforces. Like the days in our culture where someone would be shunned generally by a community because they didn't show up in church on Sunday, they're long gone, right? That is not the culture we're living in. In fact, I think we're more likely to have the other experience. We're more likely to have a slightly alien feeling experience when we identify as somebody who does show up at church than somebody who doesn't. So the culture has moved a long, long ways, and I'm not saying this as a value statement. It's just, I think, a statement of cultural fact that the culture has moved a long, long ways from being a place where you would get shunned because you weren't part of a thing called church. There's a part of that that I am going to be editorial for a moment. I think there's a part of that that's lovely as well as a part of it that makes you go, hmm. We're not going to talk about that this morning, but I would just add to it that the list of reasons to not want to be part of something called more particularly the Christian church these days just keep on coming. Pick a news cycle. I'm not going to reiterate that. I think the kind of the media has that well in hand as well as history. But the reasons why you might not want to sort of wave that flag as an individual are everywhere, right? So here we all are, and I know why some of us are here. We're here because of a parent-child dedication, and that's awesome. When we show up week over week for a thing that, whatever we call it, other people might call it church, we might call it that ourselves, I think the question, why do we do that, is actually an important question. So I'm going to speculate about that for a moment. Why do we show up? Maybe we show up... Maybe we show up so we know we're not going it alone. Maybe we show up because, like explorers of the past, we know that it's both less perilous and more effective to explore together than it is to explore on our own. And this is a community that exists to explore what we believe. And so that can feel like a dangerous, kind of hazardous thing. That can feel like an uncertain, tenuous, risky thing. And having company when we do things like that, it's important. So maybe that's why we show up. Maybe we're just tired of being isolated. Maybe we just want some company on the journey. Or maybe like Matthew shared when him and I talked about this, he told me the story of how he had recently attended a liturgical church gathering, a sort of a high church, if you're familiar with those terms, a church in which the practice was the same every week in terms of the order of service. What's all liturgy means is either order or work of the people, depending on how you're coming at the word. And he had showed up for a gathering like that, which is not something he normally does. And Matthew said, I said, well, why'd you do that? And he said, well, I felt like I needed to be connected to something ancient. And I kind of get that, right? In a culture where it can feel like there's no binding narrative, there's no kind of one story that the culture predominantly adheres to or affirms, that sense that everything's floating around loose and nothing's anchored, and we don't know what to depend on and what to trust, that can really stir up a really deep thing in us that says, I want to be connected to something ancient. I want to be connected to something that seems to have about it this beautiful durability of big ideas and cosmic questions or established practices and rhythms, but I want to be connected to something that seems like it rises above the disposability, that rises above the fragility, it rises above this life that is just awash in things like fake news and work that it takes to sustain, you know, rabid consumption. Like, I want to have an experience that's bigger than that. And ancient gestures toward that. My second conversation was with a friend who has in the past led a very influential and successful ministry, but who now, a Christian ministry, but who now finds themselves in the midst of a faith transition that I think many people in this community would identify with, but where they find themselves in terms of their faith expression these days would feel really quite foreign to the people that they used to lead. And it was one of those standing in the driveway waiting for our kids conversations. I don't know if anybody else here has those. This friend and I do. But so eventually Taya came out and hopped in the car, but by then my friend and I were into it. And so she just had to sit there for quite a while. We kind of dug into what we were digging into, which she's not unaccustomed to. And actually, she says she enjoys it. She might be just being kind. But so Taya's waiting, and we covered a lot of ground. But one of the things that we talked about in that conversation was this friend told me about a moment where, from a conversation that him and I had had a couple of years ago, where I had said something in particular that really was resonant for them. And in their words, they said that some particular phrase that I had shared in that conversation lodged inside of them. And then they went on to talk about their own spiritual journey in terms of how that lodged inside of me moment continues to have a positive and formative kind of impact. Honestly, I don't remember that conversation at all, which, among other things, served to remind me that I should carefully attend to what I say, because I never know, we never know what's going to stick, for good or for ill, from a conversation, right? I want to adjust the language of that last idea just a little bit. I want to adjust good or ill. And I want to make that language older. I want to make it more ancient. So if I was going to adjust that sentence in the direction of older language for those ideas, and subsequently for older ideas themselves, I might say it this way. I might say we should attend carefully to what we say to one another, because without being aware of it, we might be saying something that is a blessing to someone. Or a curse. So now we're in the land of voodoo. Now we're in the land of superstition. Now we're in the land of ancient beliefs that could feel kind of weird to us in the 21st century. When was the last time you hexed someone? Don't answer that. See what I'm saying? Like, actively cursed someone. I don't mean just in traffic. I mean put a curse on them. Right? So it's not the way we tend to think or use that language anymore. But if you grew up religious, the language of blessing might kind of feel familiar, right? And if you grew up in a religion that referenced the Bible, then I'm pretty sure you'll recognize that language, because the Bible is full of the language of blessing and cursing. And that, partly just because of the impact of Christianity on Western civilization, that language of blessing and cursing has made its way into our everyday speech and our everyday understandings in some ways. And in fact, it's done that so much so that if you went and look up a definition of the word blessing, what you would find as a first definition would be something like this: noun, blessing, God's favor and protection. That's courtesy of Merriam-Webster. I didn't look this up in a religious dictionary. That's just a dictionary. That's what that word carries in our culture. And then you would find an example of something like, as in, so God's favor and protection, used as in, may God continue to bless us all. That's fascinating to me. So what we've got in a word like blessing is we've kind of got this utility word, this kind of really useful little lever word for invoking or sharing God's protection or favor. Now, generally speaking, the idea of God protecting us or God showing favor to us, we might kind of think, well, that's a positive idea, right? We still have leftovers from this, though, that point to the roots of what's going on behind that pair of words, blessing and cursing. So when somebody sneezes, you might still hear someone say, God bless you, or bless you, in that moment. Well, that's the Middle Ages. That's medieval. And the theology, because there's an entire batch of theology behind that little practice, the theology is that when we sneeze, Middle Ages, we know different now about why we sneeze, but this is where it got its roots. When we sneeze, our spirit leaves our body just for a moment. It's like out there running around, okay? And because our spirit has left our body, but we got baptized when we were an infant in the medieval church, so our spirit was protected by that from evil. But when it goes out of our body, our baptized body, it's fair game. Anything could happen to that spirit for those moments. So what you got to quickly do is bless the person while the spirit's out running around loose, and then it's back in and it's all's well. Bless you. God bless you. Gesundheit. I'm German, you know, German descent in there. That's where that comes from. So there you got this tidy little cultural practice that has blessing and cursing all bundled up together, along with this superstition about the vulnerability of our spirit. We have to invoke God's favor and protection in that moment. Otherwise, bad things could happen. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to realize that behind a word or an idea like blessing, there's an ancient perspective on why good things happen and why bad things happen and what that has to do with the divine that most of us would find difficult to affirm. And not the least part of that is the idea that somehow there's a magical thing we can do, God bless you, Gesundheit, that brings the good thing to us and keeps the bad thing away. Invoke the protection or favor of God. Blessing. So that's what's behind that idea. We don't usually think about it, right? Like, who would ever think that far into this to kind of go, oh, maybe there's an idea behind blessing that needs to be examined. But the idea that there might be something good that we could share with one another, something that might last well beyond this moment that we're in, something that might have a positive impact for a long time in someone's life, that's a very powerful and appealing idea. And I don't find it difficult to imagine why an idea like that has survived as well as it has. If our notion of God includes the possibility of something like God being good, and that goodness being something that we can experience or even share with one another, then who wouldn't want that? And who wouldn't want someone else to do whatever they could to help it come their way? Who wouldn't want other people to invoke something like that on their behalf, if that was possible? But here's the thing. If we find that idea tenable, I'm not assuming that we do, but if we do, what does that look like? How does that happen? Does it happen through a kind of ritual? Like, does it happen because we happen to go to a church that has some sort of an ancient liturgy that has things in it that get called blessings? Does it happen because someone in a religious order or some hierarchical sort of spiritual position says some special words, as in the priest offered a blessing over the children? Does it happen because we kept the rules? Does it happen because we got the ritual right? Also part of that ritual that we talked about in terms of blessing someone when they sneeze, but if we wanted to back the historic truck of blessing up, we got to back it all the way up to sacrifice, because that's what's behind that ritual. What's behind that ritual is we have to do the right thing in the right moment if we want to invoke God's favor. And of course, the right thing in the right moment, in ancient times, included sacrifice. Animal sacrifice, it's a good start. Crop sacrifice. Child sacrifice. if you're kind of feeling leery at this point, just go read the Old Testament and the Abraham and Isaac story, and you've kind of got a nice little capsule of a ritual attempt to invoke God's favor. It gets derailed. It's got a happy ending. It's important. But those rituals are all behind this idea of blessing, of invoking something, doing something that makes God do something. Which raises the question, is the idea of blessing really a way of combating a curse? Is it really some sort of antidote to a spiritual malaise that predates the blessing that was already there? So that's an interesting question. We're not going to go any further with that. Or, at least not this morning, or could the idea of blessing be something, this is, in my imagination, this is quite a contrast to what I've been describing. I don't know if it'll land that way or not. Could the idea of blessing be something so ordinary, so everyday, that we don't even recognize it when it happens? Lots of times. Could blessing be something that can just slip out in ordinary conversation and still be changing someone's life years later? Could an idea like blessing be imagined as something that is in the air all around us, but that sometimes we get to focus in on or make real in a particular practiced sort of way? It's a very different idea. But one of them, I think, is big enough to contain the other. I'm on about that last one, as you may have guessed just from the tone, the idea that blessing is all around us, that there are times and ways that we can make something, we would use a word like blessing, visible, even though it's there all the time. That there might be some practice, there might be something we can do that helps us see that it's already there. We become agents in this for one another. I want to take that both a little bit further, and I want to bring it a little bit closer to home for this morning. This morning, we're going to share something that we could call a blessing. And we're going to do that with some particular parents and some particular children here at the table. We're going to do it next week as well. And we're going to do something specific that brings into focus what I believe is always the case. I believe that we all arrive in the world on the wings of the favor of God. I believe that we all arrive in the world blessed by God, if you will, breathed into life by divine spirit and loved unconditionally by God. I think that's the way we begin our lives, every one of us. And in some unique and vulnerable ways, I think this is especially true ongoing for the children in our midst. Unique because of the shapes that it takes in kids, shapes we use words like innocence for. And vulnerable because we, the adults, are responsible to protect and nurture that state of being. We are responsible to nurture that way of looking at the world so that what grows up in our kids is a consciousness of God's unconditional love that will never, ever leave them. I am not, in that sentence, trying to describe a particular religious expression of that consciousness. I'm trying to describe something bigger than that. I'm trying to describe something that might take a particular religious shape, it might not, but that our children can't shake loose. As one of my kids has been known to say, this story has a hold of me. That's different than I have a hold of it. Because if it has a hold of me, if the idea that God loves me and that there's nothing in the world that can change that sticks with me, then I can be a fairly bold spiritual explorer. I can be a fairly bold person in the world because at the root of my being is a conviction or a feeling, if I'm not being conscious of it, that whatever else is true about the divine, it's good. I am loved, and I can't undo that even if I try. And God knows sometimes we try. We test that pretty hard sometimes as humans, right? I think that's ours to nurture as adults. In one another, and absolutely in the young. It's also ours to assail. There are so many ways we can unravel that, right? I don't know a parent who doesn't know what I mean if I use a phrase like parental guilt. right? Okay. Want me to sum it up in everyday language? Oh, God, did I just screw up my kid? Who hasn't had that moment, right? Really, what's going on in there at some level is, what am I nurturing? Like, in what I just did I nurture or did I assail this belief that love could be unconditional, that acceptance could be unconditional, that it could be unassailable, even by your idiot of a parent in this moment? Right? Like, that's huge. Because in the end, you know, the things that liberate us and motivate us to be whole people, they're things like grace and love. Like, guilt and shame just actually don't work. They just don't succeed. We forget. We're going to put language to this in ways this morning that are full of the ancient shapes of blessing. Language that reminds us that God is good, that God is here, that we're both the recipients of that love and also the purveyors and nurturers of it, that we both take it in and we pass it on. We will reference in this blessing of parents and children this morning, we will reference the way of Christ in this particular liturgy, something that I would regard as a particular path that we can choose as a way of receiving that goodness and of sharing it. If that isn't your path this morning, I hope you can still join in what we're doing together by thinking of that phrase as representative of the path that you have chosen or of the path that you seek. I hope that can be a big, big open phrase for us this morning rather than an exclusionary or judging one. Maybe that's hoping for a lot. Still what I hope for. When we do this together, there will be words for all of us to share. I'll speak some. The community will speak some. The parents will speak some. This is all going to be up on the screen, so it'll be, I think, pretty clear what we're doing together. And again, what I want to offer to us all this morning is an invitation to participate in this, not an obligation to participate in it. I know what it feels like to be in a religious setting and have words put in front of me that we're all supposed to say and look at them and go, I don't believe that. I know what that feels like. That's not a nice feeling. It's like, now what do I do? You know? So in this community, you do what you choose, and it's fine. If that's silence, fine. If it's speaking it and reinterpreting it so it means something that's true to you, that's fine. But just know that it's not an obligation. It's an invitation. My hope is that the goodness and love that is God will lodge in the lives of the precious little people that we're going to bless this morning, and also in us, and that in some way that goodness will be carried by the words that we speak, and that it will be carried by those words in ways that will last us all. That's what I hope.